get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
My boy's awake and smart.
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Andrew Garda.
I'm friggin' velvety smooth.
And here we go.
That's right, folks. It's another edition of The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. Welcome to CheeseheadTV.com's NFL flagship podcast. Today, we're going to be heading down to Texas, talk about the bad news that the Houston Texans got in regards to Matt Schaub. Head over to Denver and hear about John Fox saying that there's no way they can win running that other crap, and what that means for Tim Tebow, starting quarterback. And what that means for the Jets coming in off of a bad loss to the New England Patriots and heading over to Denver in what has to feel a little bit like a trap game, despite the fact that they already had their trap game. It was called the New England Patriots beating them twice. We'll also be talking a little bit about some of the other injuries from around the league. And of course, we're going to talk about the best team in the league. Normally, I don't do Packers stuff too much on here, but the Green Bay Packers are playing way too well to ignore them anymore. Yes, that's right, cheeseheads. This week, we're actually doing Green Bay Packer talk on the hard count. Oh my God, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. That's right, folks. First, last week, I had my Penn State rant. You guys put up with it. I appreciate it. A lot of people liked it, got very good reaction about it. Of course, I've been tracking the story since. I'm not going to go off again. I kind of feel like everything that could have been said has generally been said, especially by me. Every time you think that this hasn't hit rock bottom, it digs deeper. It's just a horrific story that continues to be horrifying. Now, last week, of course, if you listened to my rant, and if you didn't, feel free to stop. Head out over to CheeseheadTV.com and check out last week's hard count. But one thing I said, and it is something I've heard other people say, is what we need to take from this. I mean, there's a lot we could take from this. There's a lot about taking sexual abuse more seriously. There's a lot about protecting our children. There's a ton of stuff we can take from this, but from a pure college sports standpoint and sports standpoint as well, I said we really need to take a hard look at the way we look at college sports and the way we approach it and the fact that this is not about college athletics. It's about athletics. It's about big business, big money. I wanted to point you to what I thought was a fantastic take on that, and that was by Andrew Brandt over at National Football Post. Now, I've been reading NFP since Lombardi was there. Mike Lombardi was there a few years ago. It was the reason I went over to that site. Found out stuff like Andrew Brandt was doing. Wes Bunting does fantastic draft stuff. I really look forward to hanging with that cat in Mobile in just a couple of months at the Senior Bowl. Just great work over there across the board. Brandt put together an article called The End of Entitlement. Tragedy at Penn State Forces Change. And it really talks a lot about what I was talking about last week, which is to say we need to take a look at college athletics in this country, how we approach it, what it means. And Brandt took the standpoint of we are putting these coaches, these players on such a high pedestal that there really is just no checks and balances. Essentially, there's no stopping people from doing kind of what they want. And it's funny because this occurred to me, and I think I said it last week, but I have definitely said it to people. But Andrew Brandt points out, he's like, you know, we went nuts over the Ohio State tattoo thing. You know, people lost their minds about Reggie Bush taking money for an apartment or a house for his family to rent. You know, We were complaining because Cam Newton his dad may have asked for money during recruiting. I mean, there are all these things that we thought were all so crucial and horrible signs of where our college sports are, but we just saw a situation where one of the allegedly cleanest, most pristine programs did everything it could to cover up a guy who apparently is, allegedly is, a pedophile. Let him do it. Let him keep going. And you can defend Joe Paterno all you want. But he knew. He knew. In fact, it has come out, if you read the grand jury indictment, it has come out that he essentially was like, he stopped McQuarrie because he didn't want to hear more. Like, he didn't want to hear the graphic details. So, you know what? If you're a 60 or 70-year-old man and a conversation's making you uncomfortable, I think you could be pretty damn well sure that the 10-year-old it was happening to may have. Now, the other interesting aspect of this entire case at this point is whether McQuarrie actually did break this up or not. There have been some conflicting reports of that, because that's been the other big deal in this case, is why didn't he break it up? And oh, by the way, Sandusky didn't do any favors for himself by being interviewed by Bob Costas. And I am critical of Bob Costas a lot, especially those halftime rants or whatever the hell that he goes on about during Sunday Night Football, which are often aimless and usually inane and sometimes just waffling. You know, the most famous being, you know, the Cowboys could be 8-0, they could be 0-8, they could be 4-4. Instead, you know, I don't need to hear, it's just a waste of my time. But Costas lit into him pretty hard. I mean, that was one of the better interviews I've seen. If you haven't seen it, check it out. And of course, also check out Brandt's article at nationalfootballpost.com. End of entitlement. It's fantastic thoughts from a guy who is wired into the college football scene and like some of us, myself included, is a father and looks at it from that standpoint as well. And I think that that is also something that it's hard to separate. You know, you're a dad. It's really, I don't want to say impossible to pull that out, but it's very difficult. So, just wanted to turn you on to that article. I know at this point, I mean, you're probably a little bit, if you've been paying attention, you're probably a little overwhelmed by it. If you haven't been paying much attention, you're probably done hearing about it. But this is a serious problem, and it is indicative of an overall culture within college sports of preferential treatment. You know, all animals are created equal. Some are just more equal than others, to paraphrase a very famous George Orwell book. So it'll be interesting to see what the shakeout and the fallout is. I mean, there could honestly be, and a couple of people have mentioned this, but there could honestly be no Penn State. If this was a private university, Penn State would be dead. I mean, the lawsuits. I mean, somebody pointed out that the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church, has been like selling off land like fiends, trying to pay off the stuff, the lawsuits that they've had to face because of what happened with the priests. You could be damn sure if Penn State was not a state institution, like, there would be no Penn State within a decade. Like, they'd end up selling the university off. As it is, I'm sorry, Pennsylvania, you're going to end up paying for this stupidity tax-wise. But all right, that's enough. That was 5 minutes on last week's story. I just wanted you guys to hear about Brandt's story. I think it's a very good article. If you have any interest, definitely go check it out. So let's move on to NFL football. I mentioned it up top. Let me get it out of the way. You know what? Aaron Rodgers doesn't suck. The Packers don't suck. And in fact, I would go so far as to say the Packers seem to be peaking at right about the right time. It may even be a tad early, or God forbid, maybe they didn't even peak yet. If this is a team that hasn't peaked yet, then we're all screwed. If you like any other team, there is no stopping this Packers team. Now, it feels to me like there's going to be a stumble somewhere. And I don't think that that's the worst thing in the world. I think that sometimes a team that has a tremendous amount of success can get upset because they're taking it for granted. It's a conversation actually. Oops, dropping things in my office. conversation I was having actually with someone today. I was over at my son's football team's headquarters as the boys were watching film of their upcoming opponent. That would be the Queens Falcons, my son's team, who are in the New York Youth Football League's championship game this Sunday in Staten Island. If you are in Staten Island and bored around 11 o'clock, come on by. But so they were watching some tape, and I was talking with other parents as we were kind of just kicking around outside while things were getting set up. And the team that they're supposed to be playing is undefeated, and they nearly lost last week. And we were talking about how sometimes when you have success, and it's not always easy success, but when you have success and constant success, it can derail you just as well as, you know, inept play. You start looking at players and other teams and going, you know, we've beaten them before, they're going to be easy. All that being said, I look at the remaining schedule for the Packers and I see a couple of potential loopholes. And they should take care of the Bucs this week. I think at this point that they're going to blow the Lions out. They are in Detroit, so it may be more of a fight. It does have the feel of a trap game, but I don't think it is. Giants could be a difficult game. Raiders shouldn't be any problems. Chiefs shouldn't be any problems. Bears are always tough, but it's in Lambeau, so I think that's a Bears loss. And the Detroit Lions, again, I really don't see. I see a couple of close games, but I don't see anything that's really going to challenge them. Here's the other thing I'm not worried about if I'm a Packer fan. Focus. I was just saying that, you know, sometimes you get an undefeated team or a very successful team, and they are unable to, you know, keep that sort of high level of play going because they start taking things for granted. Denver's coming into town. We could beat them. Oh, you know, it's the team that has two wins. You know, we're going to be able to wipe the floor with them. I don't get that feeling from the Packers. Now, we can go all the way back to preseason, or let me actually take the Wayback Machine even farther back to off-season when there was a strike and everybody was having their off-season workout. And the Packers took some flack for not having those. And I gave them a little flack too. I thought, you know, team building, other things like that, it's good to be together and work together and keep each other accountable. There are certainly teams where I think it was incredibly necessary because they've got some chowder heads on their teams. I think looking back on it, it was sort of a different teams need different things. So maybe the Saints need it, maybe the Packers didn't. This is a very disciplined team, is what I'm driving at. They didn't need the offseason workouts because this is a team that pretty much across the board was out there working. Was out there working their tail off. They didn't need to all be together because each one knew what was expected of them, what their responsibilities are, and each one strives to meet those expectations each and every day. So this is a team, and this is not unlike the Patriots a few years back when they were running the table. When they nearly went undefeated, went to the Super Bowl, lost to the Giants. But this is a team that has tremendous focus right now. There isn't much that this team can't do. They do have some struggles defensively. It's not to say that they are perfect. They have some defensive line issues. Sometimes their secondary is a little shaky. But this is a team that has gotten better over the last few weeks. I mean, I said at the end of last year when the Packers were starting their playoff run, you know, this is a team that had tremendous amounts of injuries last year. A lot of guys on the injured reserve. And that's not the case this year. They have a couple. It's nowhere near as bad as last year. You know, they've got everything clicking the way they want it to. The defenders are playing well, not always great, but well. And Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind. Now, he could be on a team that had no defense and everything else is crap, and he could be thrown for, you know, 5,000-6,000 yards this year and it wouldn't matter. That's not the case. Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, James Jones, Randall Cobb, even Donald Driver, all of them have been playing exceedingly well. Doing a great job of giving him targets and adjusting to what's going on. So if Rodgers needs to get rid of that ball very quickly, one of these guys is going to be open. James Starks and Ryan Grant, pretty good running back duo. This is a team that does not really feel the need to run the ball. It's funny, someone was like, well, Green Bay's not very good at running the ball. You know, you could just stop the run, you focus on that, and, you know, make Aaron Rodgers beat you. First of all, Aaron Rodgers will beat you. If you make him beat you, he'll beat you. Second of all, what do you mean stop the run? They haven't had a run game. Like, and they don't care. Like, the last thing the Packers care about is whether you're able to stop their run. Because they stop their run. But Starks and Grant are both effective backs. They could play. They could play. Starks is 4.6 yards per carry average. That's not bad. He's been playing well. And oh, by the way, JerMichael Finley's there too. They only got one of the best tight ends in the game. You know, B.J. Raji and Howard Green. B.J. Raji especially is just a beast in the inside, defensive tackle, defensive end. Pickett, Wilson, and Wynn have played well. And mostly that's Pickett and Wilson. Great linebackers inside and out. Bishop, Hawk, Clay Matthews is starting to come on right at the right time. Good corners. Good corners, good safeties. You had Burnett, you had Pepra, Woodson, Tremont Williams. Devon House, I think, is going to develop into a really good cornerback. He hasn't seen much time this year. Or hasn't really seen any. He was in one game. But I think that pick's going to actually work out really well coming down the road. And Mason Crosby hasn't missed a field goal. And hasn't missed an extra point. I mean, sure, bring up the kicker, Garda. But the fact of the matter is that there's nobody playing horribly. There are problems. Their offensive line still has issues. Like I said, the D-line sometimes has issues. But for the most part, this is a team that is just really good. It's hard for me to believe that this is a team that's going to falter between now and January, February. And never, once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. Hey, look, the Saints got upset last year by a team with the losing record in the Seattle Seahawks. But again, this is a team, this Green Bay team, that I honestly believe that focus, it's not waning. So the rest of the NFC is on notice because they're going to have to really, really work hard to beat this team. And then whoever goes from the AFC, they better be expecting one hell of a fight. I really do think the Green Bay Packers probably the best chance to repeat in years, in a couple decades. It's a fantastic team. So I wanted to give props to the Green Bay Packers on the Green Bay Packers website. Because it's outstanding. And this is for Aaron Nagler. Rodgers is no Tim Tebow, but he's a pretty good quarterback. So moving on. Speaking of pretty good quarterbacks, Matt Schaub has what has been reported to be a Lisfranc injury to his foot. Now, there is a lot of debate as to whether or not Schaub is going to miss the rest of the season. Here's your Fantasy Football Insider, brought to you by footballguys.com. For the day, if Schaub comes back, it's going to be way too late for your fantasy football team. At this point, with the Lisfranc injury, you've got to figure that it's a month. And the worst thing about this right now is the fact that the Texans are in control of this division. When I say conference, they are in no way, shape, or form in control of the AFC. Great thing about the AFC is that nobody's in control of that conference. The Packers are in charge of everything else, including all of the NFC. There's always something that the AFC, like there's some team somewhere that's going to just completely chop block someone when they're not looking. But this was supposed to be Houston's year. You know, the Colts don't have Manning, and they flat out suck. Jacksonville has a rookie at quarterback. Tennessee's looked all right, but they're fading a little bit, although Chris Johnson finally waking up and playing well. Now the Texans need to turn to Matt Leinart. Now, I usually call Matt Leinart Matty Kegstand because of his reputation in terms of partying. I did, and I would like to point you back to the Q&A series I did earlier this year. And when I talked to a young lady named, that would be Stephanie Stradley, writes for the Houston Chronicle, covers the Houston Texans. She works for Chronicle Online, used to be a Fan House writer. And I had her on to do the Q&A, or I should say I interviewed her for the Q&A, and she was saying that Matt Leinart, don't undersell what being in this program again this year could mean for him. Because it's a situation where this is a very good group of people to tutor him. And if he's going to have a shot, this is the situation to have a shot in. Now, I don't think that they were really looking forward to having Leinart in this year by any stretch of the imagination. He's the backup. They want Matt Schaub in there. But he does have a lot of things on his side. He's got an outstanding run game. Arian Foster and Ben Tate are playing lights out. He will be getting Andre Johnson back. Owen Daniels is already there. The line is blocking well. The defense has been playing relatively well. He's got what he needs to succeed. The question is, can he succeed? What can he do? Because Leinart so far has not shown us that he is an outstanding quarterback. He has shown us he is occasionally a good quarterback. But he's not a guy who's going to be leading a team long term. However, this is what the Texans have to work with. Now, and Packer fans, I made you happy earlier. I'll make you unhappy now. There's a crazy rumor that maybe the Texans should go talk to Brett Favre. In no way, shape, or form should this happen. I'm sorry. There is no reason for him. There's just no reason for him to come back and play with the Texans. I think it was Aaron Nagler, one of the my former co-host with the Mo Host, who was one of the founders here at Cheesehead TV. I think it was him who said essentially, anybody who thinks Favre may still have something left in the tank didn't watch him last year. Favre's got nothing left in the tank. And do you think he's going to be happy handing the ball off to Arian Foster like 400 times a game? Hell no. Bringing Favre in would be an unmitigated disaster. Far beyond anything that Matt, I've had one too many to drink and I'm hanging out with sorority girls in a hot tub, Leinart had, any damage he does is not going to be as bad as I think Favre would be in this locker room. And, you guys were worried about Favre in the Minnesota locker room, and it did cause strife. There was strife there. Anyway, this far into the season, I just don't see it. So it'll be interesting to see if the Texans make any other moves. They got to bring in something else or someone else to back up Matt Leinart. Leinart has the measurables. Like, he doesn't have the strongest arm, but overall, like, he's got the skills. He just has never been able to translate it to the pro game. You know, maybe the problem is that the Texans, and before them Arizona, shouldn't be running that other crap. Or at least that's what John Fox says. Fox, excuse me. Out in the press talking about the switch to a sort of, I don't know, a spreadish offense. The pistol, whatever you want to call it. Came out and talked to Jeff Darlington of NFL.com. I was basically saying, listen, you know, we went into the Lions game with plan A, and frankly, plan A sucked, and we were blown out. And Fox told Darlington, we decided that if Tim Tebow is going to be our guy, we can't do that other crap. We had to tweak it. So you can't run a regular conventional NFL offense. You kind of just need to adapt. And Fox said, do whatever the hell it takes. I mean, what the hell? You don't get points for style in this league. Let me tell you something. My man is really good in the offense. You know what I mean? I do kind of know what you mean, Foxy. I feel you. I do. And it's refreshing in my mind when coaches realize that maybe they have someone who could be specially talented in an area, and rather than try and shove that square peg in a round hole, they actually adapt the offense to the personnel they have. Now, part of the problem is, and we touched on this a few weeks ago, but going to this sort of spread offense, yeah, Tebow knows it, but most of the rest of the players don't. I mean, they're familiar with it. They may even have run elements of it before, but they're having to learn a new offense, and it's like week 7, 8, 9, 10. Denver could be peaking, and I still hold that 8-8 is not outside of my reach, by the way. So Aaron better not be trying to choose out what he wants for dinner, because he may not win that bet. But like I said, it's refreshing to have a coach fit the organization to the player. And, you know, and Fox didn't have to do this. Fox inherited Tebow. And so far, there's a lot of Josh McDaniel picks that are not playing well or flat out busted. For examples, please look at Exhibit A. His name is Knowshon Moreno. There was a busted pick. I think you could honestly call it a bust at this point. I know he's going on the IR, and I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but no. I mean, Moreno's just not that good. He didn't have to roll Tebow out there. I mean, maybe there was a lot of pressure because you had Denver fan base going nuts. And not even all of Denver's fan base, by the way. Elements of Denver's fan base. But Orton wasn't getting the job done. I mean, Orton can throw the ball more effectively than Tebow anytime, any day. But honestly, he can't score. He can't get touchdowns in the red zone. Tends to fall apart. So they yanked him, and I'm totally fine with that, because on top of everything else, you got to know if Tebow's the guy. Get enough tape on him and know. You have him on a bench, he's not going to tell you anything. But, so they put Tebow in. They're sort of stuck there now, because what are you going to go, Brady Quinn? I don't think so. I don't think anybody willingly is putting Brady Quinn into an offense. So you have to stick with Tebow. And you know, the players, according to Pro Football Talk, players are not totally sold on the whole Tebow spread offense thing. They're sort of warming up. And listen, winning cures everything. If this is a team that can continue to win, you will see people not care what kind of offense that they're running. Except for the people they're beating. You know, on the other side of the ball, and I said this earlier today, and I made this analogy like a week or two in from the press box. But it's Tebow versus Tebow this weekend. It's like Tebow versus Tebow's 1.7 or something like that. Because Mark Sanchez is not playing all that well. Aaron and I talked about it in the offseason. Listen, the fact is, we expected more from him right now. This is not an incredibly complex offense. I mean, it's ground and pound, for crying out loud. And when it's not grounding and pounding, offense coordinator Brian Schottenheimer loves the dink and dunk. Loves to have those short passes, some of which are too short. Sanchez has struggled, but he's a guy who finds ways to win. He's very driven. He's very scrutinized in the media, and he's got his vivid supporters and his vivid detractors. So it's interesting. I say it sort of jokingly, but it's true. It's almost Tebow versus Tebow version 1.2. It was grown in a lab or something somewhere. I think this Thursday night is going to be a very interesting game. You have the Jets coming off of an awful loss to the New England Patriots. My son asked me today on the way back from football practice, "Hey, did you watch the Jet game?" And I said, "Unfortunately, yes." He said, "Why unfortunately?" And I said, "Because the Jets were brutal." Listen, when things aren't going right, they're not going right. And things did not go right Sunday night. And on top of everything else, you know, Sean Green, if Sanchez hits you in the hands, I don't care how hard he throws it, you cannot pop it up in the air like that. You cannot bump set it to the other team. That's not the only time that... It's not the only time where the Jets kind of let one get away in this game. It wasn't the last momentum killer, but it was a momentum killer. Yeah. What are you going to do? I mean, this is a Jets team that should be better than it is right now. They started to peak, and they stumbled. Denver Broncos should be a walk in the park for them, even if the Jets' defense is not doing very well against the run. It should be a situation where they are able to stopper this up, because there's not a lot of threat of throwing the ball. They're going to throw a couple passes, probably a big one to Eric Decker at some point, but there's no way that this offense is so dynamic that the Jets should really struggle. And yet this has all the feeling of a trap game. This has all of the sensations, all the warning signs of the Jets being in a position of overthinking it or not thinking about it too much, and then bang. So this will be an interesting game this Thursday night. Probably one of the more interesting and intriguing matchups, which you don't think that's the case because Denver has been awful, but you know, how's Tebow going to do? How's Tebow going to do against a good defense and a great pass defense? How is Tebow going to do handing the ball off to Lance Ball and perhaps Jeremiah Johnson? Will the Jets be able to do all right without Tomlinson? Will Joe McKnight get a lot of play? And if he gets dinged up, this is the first time this year that Bilal Powell is active off the practice, or not, he wasn't on the practice squad. Bilal Powell was active and dressed for a game. He will be available Thursday night. I'm a big fan of what Powell does. I think he's an incredibly good back, and it can do, I would say, just about anything on the football field. Jeremy Curley banging up his knee is also a concern. He was a very good punt returner. They certainly missed him, especially with a fumble that McKnight gave up. So honestly, it's a tight game. It's going to be a good game. It's going to be a tight game. I'm sure we'll talk about it the following week after. And the only markets that'll care are the Northeast and Denver. But there you go. It should be interesting. Tim Tebow, You know, and again, getting back to it, just to put a button on that portion of the conversation, but Tim Tebow basically can put this team on his back and run with it. The question now becomes is, with the adversities he's had this season, can Mark Sanchez anymore? So leaving you to ponder that thought, I'm going to take a brief break to go grab a cup of water. When I come back, we will talk more football, more injury news, and of course my picks. This is The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. You are at CheeseheadTV.com's NFL podcast. I will be right back after this.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You play to win. And I don't care if you don't have any wins. You go play to win. When you start telling me it doesn't matter, then retire. Get out. Because it matters. So, all right. Yeah. That. This whole conversation bothers me.
Welcome back from the break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
It's The Hard Count coming at you. All right, folks. Welcome back. We're going to head into some news and notes now, and then we will get to the moment I know you've all been waiting for. My picks for Week 11. Huzzah! Since we were talking about the Jets and Broncos, let's just start there. Because there's an awful lot of big mess in New York and Denver, and I'm not even talking about how the teams are playing. Injuries for the Denver Broncos number... No'Shawn Moreno, who is gone, it seems, for the season. And as I mentioned, huge bust. And a guy who just, combination can't stay healthy and just doesn't have it. So he's gone. Willis McGahee limited in Tuesday's practice. We're not really sure whether he's going to be able to play Thursday. Regardless of those two things, John Fox is going to run a lot. He's going to take it at the New York Jets middle linebackers, middle of the line, middle of the defensive line, and pound it. And every once in a while he's going to have Timmy Tebow flip outside or something. This is going to be an interesting test for the Jets because, really, this is a team that is predicated on blitzing and coverage. When a guy throws, four or five passes? When a guy has two completions, that essentially makes a lot of your plans sort of irrelevant. Darrell Revis is a great shutdown corner. However, if there's no one to shut down, you're mitigating his possibilities. So you could have Lance Ball and Jeremiah Johnson. Now, Lance Ball is a bowling ball. He is a big battering ram of a guy who will wear down the Jets' front. Jeremiah Johnson. Now, if McGahee doesn't play, Jeremiah Johnson will not only be dressed, he will probably play. Now, Johnson's biggest problem is he can't stay healthy, which the Denver Broncos can identify with because they've had many, many guys who can't stay healthy either. But so, Lance Ball is a guy who's going to wear down the defense. Jeremiah Johnson is fast. He's effective. He's dangerous with the ball in his hands. He can't stay healthy. But he's reportedly healthy now. So, if Jeremiah Johnson is there, I actually think the Jets have more to worry about from him than Ball. Because he can do more things. And he's got some big playability. Speaking of big playability, Joe McKnight practicing fully. It hurt his toe this past weekend. He's going to be practicing all week, which is good because LaDainian Tomlinson is out with a knee injury. You don't really know how long that'll last. But McKnight will have an opportunity to show his stuff. Now, if McGahee's there, if Tomlinson is there, I don't know when we see McKnight get his shot because he's not averaging a lot of carries. But let's be honest, Sean Green's having a good season. Started off very slow, but he's a serviceable back. Joe McKnight brings a lot more dynamicism to this offense. I think if they put him in there, find ways to get him involved, I think that they'd be very happy with the results. Speaking of guys who may get a shot, Bilal Powell is going to be active Thursday night for the first time this season. I still say that Powell was a fantastic pick. I think the Jets probably feel the same way. But more than anything else, I think that Powell, if used correctly, much like McKnight, much like Jeremiah Johnson, is the type of guy who can do a lot of things well. You just need to ask him to do it. But honestly, Bilal Powell is a guy who can do everything. He blocks very well, for especially for a guy his size. He is very good in space. He can catch the ball well. He has great speed. He has good maneuverability. If Powell's active, I wouldn't be surprised if he got a couple carries. Speaking of Tomlinson, by the way, had a little bit of a setback while doing individual drills on Tuesday, which is why he's not in the game. Because he re-sprained it or re-aggravated it. And that's, you know, that's going to happen when you're 400 years old. And fact of the matter is, it's almost an almost I don't care bowl. Now, Broncos Jets is not intriguing football unless you like train wrecks or... Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing I can think of. Moving on, here's your magnanimous gesture of the day. Peyton Manning is apparently okay with the Colts drafting a new quarterback. Now, there are a couple things to look at it, that statement as. First of all, if you're Peyton Manning, that's kind of a trap question. That's a question you cannot answer correctly. The fact of the matter is that he kind of needs to be okay with a quarterback coming in. But what is he going to say? No. They can't bring a quarterback in until I'm dead. Yeah, because that should endear him to Indianapolis's sometimes fickle fan base. What do you think of a new QB, Manning? I think it's a horrible idea. But you guys didn't win a game last year. That I don't care. This is my team. But you can't play anymore. They said one more hit and you die. I don't care. It's my team. I mean, what was he supposed to say? Secondarily, if I could put on my tinfoil hat for a second, him coming out and being okay with a QB, does that mean that maybe, possibly, he thinks he's done? That's not outside the realm of possibility, is it? I mean, let's face it. The guy's been trying to deal with his neck injury for several years now. It's not getting any better. In fact, it has gotten worse. So could this be Manning sort of saying, fine, like I might have another year or two to go, but yeah, if you see an Andrew Luck, a Matt Barkley, let's go get him. So I think it's a combination of, well, he kind of has to answer with the affirmative, but I do think that Manning is smart enough and nowhere near as egotistical as people like to give him credit for. But I think he's realistic enough to know if he can and can't do it, or how long he might be able to do it for. So will the Colts draft a quarterback? I think they should. But let's be honest. How many wacky things happen every draft season? May I point to Exhibit A, Nosha Moreno in the first round. Josh McDaniels, super genius. But yeah, I think the Colts should go for quarterback. I think they should have addressed this years ago. I think they'd be in much better shape if they hadn't just sort of flown along hoping things worked out okay. So, all right, moving on. Guys, it is time. It is time for that moment that you've all been waiting for. My picks. Now, here's the thing. I had a notebook with my picks in it. I don't have a damn clue where it went. So in terms of, and I'm shuffling through my desk right now, but it actually was literally moved off my desk, and I don't know by who or why. Maybe to cover some of my awful picks. But so I'm kind of going to judge myself from last week based on my memory, which I'm exhausted and haven't been sleeping well lately. So your guess is as good as mine. I'm going to give myself a loss in the Raiders-Chargers game. I was pretty sure the Chargers were going to be able to overcome and win, but they just played like they didn't give a damn. They did not play well, and oh, by the way, Vincent Jackson, really? Really? A toss up in the air, and you can't be bothered to jump up to at least break up the catch? As I said on Twitter, Vincent Brown would have had that. Vincent Brown had a phenomenal day, by the way. 5 catches for 97 yards and a touchdown. Denarius Moore, 5 catches, 123 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Fantastic day by the Raiders. Rookie wide receiver. So I got that wrong. Saints-Falcons, I got right. Steelers-Bengals, I got right. Rams-Browns, I think I picked the Rams, so I'm going to say I got that right. Cowboys-Bills, I want to say I picked the Cowboys. Although this seems like the sort of pick that I might make otherwise, but I'm going to give myself that one too. Jags-Colts, that's a gimme. That doesn't even count. Chiefs-Broncos, I picked the Broncos. The only reason I know I picked the Broncos is because I need them to win more games because I want my 8-8 dinner from Nagler. Redskins-Dolphins, I'm pretty sure I picked the Redskins, and that pretty much didn't happen. Cards, Eagles, I'm pretty sure I took the Cardinals. I know that didn't happen. Texans, Bucks, I picked the Texans. Titans, Panthers, I picked the Titans. I think. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of these, by the way. Ravens, Seahawks, I know I picked the Ravens, so I was wrong there. Lions, Bears, I took the Lions, was wrong there. Giants, Niners, I think I took the Niners. Jets, Pats, I took the Jets. That didn't work out so well. Packers, Vikings, I'm not even going to dignify that with a response because anything other than the Packers would have been, as Nagler would say, the wrong answer. So let's look at today's games and go, or this week's games, and let's go over them. All right, Jets, Broncos, and once again, I put myself in a difficult position. Difficult positions right now because, one, I need Broncos win to start. I mean, they'll be 5-5, but I'd still need help getting to that 8-8. By the same token, I want the Jets to win. And frankly, I think that Sanchez is a slightly better quarterback at this point in his career, maybe more than slightly. I think Sean Green can run very well, and I think the defense steps up. Broncos' defense is going to be problematic for the Jets. Von Miller needs to get blocked and needs to get blocked right now. In fact, some Jet linemen need to go out to Denver right now and just stand in front of Von Miller and make sure he can't get around him. And that's how we'll hang for that game, Jets-Broncos. But I'm going to go with the Jets. I think that overall they're going to come up fired up after the Pats spanking. I actually feel bad for the Broncos because the Jets could really put a hurt on them this week, I should say. Jags-Browns, Blaine Gabbert, meet Colt McCoy. Colt McCoy, meet Blaine Gabbert. Blaine's got Maurice Jones-Drew, and Colt McCoy has, I'm going to go with the Jags here, even though they are away. I think that with Maurice Jones-Drew and the wide receivers they have there that are not great, but are okay, I think it's not going to be. I don't think the Browns are going to have enough guns to hang with them. Panthers, Lions. This feels and smells like a trap game. My gut, I'm going to tell you right now, my gut feels Panthers. But I'm not going to go that way. I think the Lions get back on track in this game. Now, if Stafford's hand can stay healthy, sky's the limit, except for when they run into Green Bay in a couple weeks. But I'll take the Lions over the Panthers. I almost said Panthers. So once again, you know that I like the Panthers this week. This feels like a trap game. I just don't have the balls to actually pick it. Green Bay, Tampa Bay, Battle of the Bays. This is all day long, Green Bay Packers. Bills, Dolphins. Important divisional game in many respects. The Dolphins have played relatively well the last couple weeks. However, Buffalo is more legitimate than that 5-4 record shows right now. So I think Fitzpatrick, Fred Jackson, Stevie Johnson, the whole offense is going to have a good day. Are they going to put up tremendous points? I don't think so, but the Bills will come away with a win here in Miami. The Raiders at the Vikings. I don't like anything I've seen of the Vikings. I do like Christian Ponder. I think all things being equal, he's played all right. But I don't think that this is a... I don't think the Vikings have the horses to stay with the Raiders. Palmer's getting comfortable. There's a lot to like. The only thing they don't have is Darren McFadden. And frankly, Michael Bush runs pretty well without him. And Tywan Jones is worthy of getting a shot as well. Cowboys and Indians up next. Cowboys, Redskins. Redskins going the wrong direction. Cowboys getting better and stronger. I'm going with the Cowboys. DeMarco Murray, Tony Romo, Jay Witten, Dez Bryant, Laurent Robinson. Just too much talent. On the other side of the field, you got Rex Grossman and then a bunch of guys and Fred Davis. So that's just too much. Just too much for the Redskins. Cowboys are going to take that one. Bengals, Ravens. Ravens bouncing back from a tough loss. Bengals bouncing back from a tough loss. That's a tough one. I'm going to go with the home dogs, the Ravens. I think that Baltimore is just too good to come off of two games where they struggled, had problems. I mean, they're gonna right the ship. And they're 4-0 at home. So I fully expect the Baltimore Ravens to beat the Bengals. Afternoon game number one, Seahawks at St. Louis Rams. Not that long ago, this looked like this could have been a marquee matchup. It's really not anymore. And, you know, the Seahawks have been playing very good football the last month or so, and the Rams have not. The Rams are home. They got Bradford. They got Steven Jackson. But I just think this is going to be the Seahawks being able to come into St. Louis and steal a win out of here. So I'm going with the Seahawks. Next game up, Cardinals 49ers. I don't even think this is close. John Skelton's been playing well, and he throws the ball to Larry Fitzgerald. But honestly, 49ers are just playing too well. I'm picking the 49ers at home against a slip-sliding away Cardinals team. Titans at Falcons. Falcons 2-2 at home. Titans 2-2 away. How that works out. I'm going with the Falcons in this. I do like Matt Hasselbeck. It's good to see Chris Johnson back and running well. There's been a lot of news lately of the Titans and shuffling. You know, Damon Williams is playing well now, and I think the Falcons are going to be able to put all of the distractions aside and come away with a win for this game, especially if Julio Jones plays, as he's a bit ship all banged up, to steal a NFL rants and raves phrase. If you guys happen to be listening, hi, Jeff. Hi, Steven. So I think that Falcons will more than beat the Titans. I don't think it's really going to be close. Chargers, Bears. I'm going Bears all the way. Bears home. Chargers not playing well at all in any phase of the game. I think you'll probably get some good running yards from them for a while, and then it's going to fall apart. Eagles, Giants. Absolutely the Giants. The Eagles, Jeremy Maclin out. Vic with two broken ribs, who may be in, may be out. DeSean Jackson sounding like a whiny, complainy child. This should have been a marquee matchup for Sunday Night Football, but it's not all that interesting right now, and this should be a Giants win in a big fashion. So I'll be shocked if it's anything else. And Monday Night Football is just brutal. Patriots welcome the Chiefs and proceeds to beat the crap out of Tyler Palco. Matt Castle not going to play. Tyler Palco, not a great college quarterback, been serviceable in a couple spot starts or spot plays here and there throughout his career in the NFL and other places. But, this isn't even a contest. This is a beating. So the Patriots will easily beat the Chiefs on Monday Night Football. If I am wrong on all of those, feel free to let me know. ThunderingBlurb@gmail.com. You can also hit me up at Twitter. It's Andrew_GARDA. So that's going to do it for my picks. You're going to hold my feet to the fire next week. I'm going to have to go through a little bit later and try and remember what the hell that I was calling when. That's pretty much going to do it. Look for From the Press Box tonight, tomorrow. I'm taping this on Tuesday night, so it'll either post Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. Also, there's some great fantasy football content, both at footballguys.com and at bleacherreport.com. I have an article on some waiver wire moves you may want to make, so check that out. Just look for my profile there. And that's pretty much going to do it. I want to thank Aaron and Corey for giving me a place to host this wacky podcast. And, of course, I want to thank you guys for coming by and taking part in it. And, again, one of these days we'll get this thing live so that you folks can sit there and yell at me live and in color. But we'll get there eventually. It takes a while. Got some interesting things, interesting irons in the fire. I'll let you guys know as soon as I know. But good things happening. Good things happening right now. We got a little junior peewee football game this weekend. We got a little boy's birthday party tomorrow. It's all good in the hood, guys. And, of course, we've got football 24/7 at cheeseheadtv.com. So check it out, folks. If you're happening across this and don't know what a cheesehead is, go find out. And then come to me and talk, because it can be pretty scary. So, without further ado, thank you for coming by. Have yourselves a great evening or day, whenever you're listening to this. It's evening for me, so what the hell do I know what time it is? Maybe you're up in Alaska and it's dark all the time. But have yourself a good day, and I will see you. Same bat time, same bat channel next week. It's going to be a little weird with the Thanksgiving week coming up. I don't know how that's going to work, but I should have a podcast of some sort, even if it's a short one. So keep an eye on my Twitter feed and Facebook and other things, and I'll let you know when it's going up. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.
You've been listening to The Hard Count.
Let's go again!
With your host, Andrew Garda.
And you will know my name is the law when I lay my vengeance upon thee.